decided, not me. She decided that there were some dead trees that need to be cut, you know, And so I got my chainsaw out, and I don't know, Daniel was with me. We worked a little bit, and we had some issues with the chain kept slipping off. And I said, well, I don't understand why this is slipping off. So I took it apart, and there was a cough drop. And I guess the only thing I can think of is last year when I last, you know, when I was using it back in the fall, I probably had reached in to get my tool out of my coat pocket. There was a cough drop in my coat pocket, and when I, you know, but, you know, and I probably, but I, it was just so funny that there was a cough drop in that. But anyway. No, it was running. It just kept slipping off. The chain did. It was down in there where you, you know, the chain, the little thing where you'd start the chain. Anyway, we figured it out, got it straight. But, you know, we're talking about suffering. And this is, I meant to say this morning, that what we did this morning is kind of like a general observation about suffering. What we're going to do in this first session here is be a little more specific about that, because, you know, Peter, there were people suffering, and they're just like people like we are, and they want to know why. Why is God, you know, letting me go through all of this? And so Peter's attempting to answer this. And, you know, children suffer. I heard about this little old girl, you know, someone asked her mama, said, did you get your brother something for Christmas? And she said, no. And she said, well, you need to give him something. And she said, what'd you give him last year? And she said, the chicken pox. So that's kind of the way it is. You know, we kind of spread our suffering around. And some of us, when we are suffering, we're not happy unless everybody else is too. But anyway, we want to talk about this idea. Why does God allow suffering? I think this is, and you can write this down, the most common question that people who refuse to listen to the gospel have asked me. I mean, if there's any one thing, I used to go around door to door at my first church, and almost everyone that didn't want to talk to me asked me this. It is the common thing. Why does God allow suffering? They reject Jesus. They'll say something like, I can't believe in a God who allowed my grandma to die of cancer. Or I can't believe in a God who allowed the Holocaust. Or I can't believe in a God that allowed Hurricane Betsy. Or whatever, you know, and we all hear that, usually from lost people. Although, as I was said this morning, I talked to someone right before church about that they were witnessing to somebody, and this person told them, I used to walk with the Lord, I used to study His Word, I used to do this and do that, and then my child died, and now I hate the Lord. You know, that is a common thing, and it is a common reason for people who are Christians or so-called Christians, write it down, to desert King Jesus. A little suffering came along in my life, or a lot of suffering came along in my life, and I am out of here. You know, if He is not going to do me right, I made a deal with Him. I told Him, I'm giving you my life, and now you got to make everything go great for me, or else I'm taking my life back. I made a deal. It's like some people think that's the way God is. Let's just make a deal with Him. Let's make a deal. I think He's Monty Hall or somebody like that. We're going to make a deal with Him, and if He doesn't hold up what I think His end of the bargain is, it's over. Last time, as I said, we generally studied this passage. I want in this session to go back to what we looked at during my sermon a while ago and look for some specific things. So let me go back. I'm using a different translation this time. 1 Peter chapter 4, actually we're going to be in 4, verses 1 through 5. Let's read it together. Therefore, now anytime you see that, therefore, it's a link to what has just been said. Okay? Let's say you're talking to somebody and you say, okay, because of this and this and this, or this, 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 and this, and this, and this, and this, therefore, because of that, I'm going to tell you this. Okay? And so that's what he's doing. Therefore, since Christ has suffered in the flesh, arm yourself also with the same purpose, because he who has suffered in the flesh has ceased from sin, so as to live the rest of the time in the flesh, no longer for the lust of men, but for the will of God. For the time already past is sufficient for you to have carried out the desire of the Gentiles, having pursued a course of sensuality, lust, drunkenness, carousals, drinking parties, and abominable idolatries. And in all this, they are surprised that you do not run with them into the same excess of dissipation. Okay? And they malign you. Okay? So, we're going to stop there. We're going to go all the way. You know, we're going to continue with this. But this is one of the things we want to talk about. We suffer so that we can give ourselves over to the will of God. Our reaction to suffering as Christian, write this down, sets us apart from the people in the world and the way they react to suffering. When I was in college, I was a college activity director at Emmanuel Baptist Church down in Hattiesburg, and one of the activities that we did was to visit the nursing home. See, I didn't know, Tony, I didn't grow up in a traditional Baptist-type situation because I was over at French camp, okay? So nobody told me that a college activity director is just supposed to plan fun things for the college kids to do. I didn't know that. I thought what that meant was we were supposed to plan ministry activities for the college kids to do. And so I did that, and lo and behold, our little old church had more college students than any of the big churches that were planning the fun things, because most Christian college students back during that time wanted to serve the Lord. And so what we did, we would go over to the nursing home. Now, Mrs. Taylor was a resident in the nursing home. And I have seen, folks, in my ministry, a lot of people suffering, particularly in nursing homes. But I have never seen anything like what Mrs. Taylor, how she suffered. Arthritis had completely rolled up Mrs. Taylor into a little ball in her bed. She just lay there in agony in her bed in a fetal position. She was in constant agony, and you could see it. You would talk to her and you could feel her agony. But she refused to take pain medicine. And the reason was because her roommate had seizures. And Mrs. Taylor wanted to always be alert, so if her roommate had seizures, she could call for help, because the nursing home she was in was kind of famous for not checking on people very well. So Mrs. Taylor suffered the agony she suffered because she didn't want to be out of it, so in case her roommate needed her. But when you went into Mrs. Taylor's room, you felt Jesus. She literally lit up and asked you how things were going in college. She wanted to know. She had been a school teacher, and she wanted to know what classes you were taking. She wanted to know what you were learning. If you were in a Bible class, she would do a little Bible drill. Remind me of Aunt Nay. You know, kids went over to visit her, and she lined them up and was doing Bible drill with them. Isn't that great? You know, and that's the way Mrs. Taylor was. Mrs. Taylor wanted to know about what your problems were. Mrs. Taylor had a notebook and a pencil by her bed. Now, she couldn't write, because her hands were like this, but she would have you write down what your prayer requests were in her notebook. And so she would sit there, and she could get the note, you know, turn the pages with her hands, you know, and she would pray for you. Listen to me. The difference in Mrs. Taylor's suffering and most of our suffering is this. Mrs. Taylor had given herself over to the will of God. You know? And most of us, you know, and I'm, you know, I'm going to be honest with you, I don't suffer very well, you know. And most of us know when we don't feel good, we want to make sure everybody knows it, right? And we want to make sure we get the sympathy that we deserve or think we deserve. Christians suffer so that they can surrender more of themselves to God. Now, I'm not there yet, but I want to be, you see. That's where we all ought to be. Now, the second thing that this passage teaches us about suffering is that suffering should be expected. And Jesus talked about this in Matthew 5:11. He says, God will bless you when people insult you and mistreat you and tell all kinds of evil lies about you because of me. And then Acts 5:41, the apostles had been arrested and beat up and all of that, and they were told, you know, not to preach anymore and all of that. It says they left the council and were very happy because God had considered them worthy to suffer for the sake of Jesus. The wages of sin is what? Death. Write that down. Death. The way to death is through suffering. Write suffering down. In this life, in these bodies we have, because of the sin we are facing, death. And suffering is a part of that journey. It's just a part of that journey. And the older you get, you know that. All of us are a little bit older. Some of us are older than others. And you know that the older you get, the more you just got the aches and pains and you got the mental and emotional. I heard someone talking about, you know, your kids grow up and there they are and you're trying to deal with that and it can be hard. And the older you get, and I think God is doing two things there. One is He is indeed helping us to grow, as I said this morning. The other is I think He's preparing us to move on up to the next level. I really do believe that. Well, I'm not always in this talking about specific sins on your part. As far as death being a part of that, you know, that suffering. You know, I've had people, you know, I used to send my devotions out to several hundred people. I don't do that anymore because I lost all their email addresses, and apparently a lot of people weren't reading them because they never texted me and said, oh, I missed your devotions, you know, so I'm down about 30 or 40, which is fine. But when I was doing that, one time I did kind of a couple of devotions about this idea of suffering and sin, the wages and that kind of thing. And several people got very upset because they thought what I was saying was it was their specific sins that were causing their suffering. No, generally, you are going to suffer physically because of sin. Adam and Eve sinned. And God said, if you sin, you will die. And as a result, all of this suffering and pain has come in. So I'm not talking about specific sin, although if you eat, you know, 2 dozen donuts a day, every day of your life, you're probably going to pay for it somewhere down the road. You know, there are consequences. But in general, sin and its cumulative effects is causing a devolution not evolution, evolution. I get kind of fun. I get kind of amused by these people that brag about evolution and how evolution. Well, no, it isn't. It's a devolution because we're getting worse. Now, the body's getting worse. Modern medicine has slowed it down some, but not by much. If you look at how long people in the Old Testament lived, I think you can kind of get a picture and a handle on that, because sin has a cumulative effect, I believe, genetically. But anyway, we won't get off on all of that. Finally, we need to realize that not all suffering is punishment. If we are living for God and we suffer, we can rejoice, as it says in our text, that we are suffering for God's glory. We can stand firm and trust Him that all things will work for good. Hebrews 12:7 says, be patient when you are being corrected. That's how God treats His kids, His children. Now, understand this. No matter what reason it is that we are suffering, God does use it. Okay. Sometimes He uses it for discipline. Hebrews 12:5-11 says, but you have forgotten that the Scripture says to God's children, when the Lord punishes you, don't make light of it. And when He corrects you, don't be discouraged. The Lord corrects the people He loves and disciplines those He calls His own. Be patient when you're being corrected. This is how God treats His children. Don't all parents correct their children? God corrects all of His children. And if He doesn't correct you, then you don't really belong to Him. Our earthly fathers corrected us, and we still respect them. Isn't that even better? To be given true life by letting our spiritual father correct us. Our human fathers corrected us for a short time, and they do it as they think best, but God corrects us for our own good because He wants us to be holy as He is. It is never fun to be corrected. In fact, at the time, it's always painful. But if we learn to obey by being corrected, we will do right and live at peace. Okay, understand that God uses discipline, and it's painful sometimes, and it's really literally suffering at times, to correct us and put us where we need to be in relationship to Him for His glory. Brother Alex Koblitz this morning at the breakfast brought this out. Some of you were there, and he said that, you know, everything that's happening, he used the coming out of the promised land, all of that wasn't just to liberate God's people. No, it was for God's glory. Everything that happened, everyone that came out of the promised land, yes, they came out, but it was for God's glory. It was for God's glory. Everything, their whole nation that was developed, wasn't developed just so a bunch of people could somehow be brought out of slavery. It was for God's glory. And everything that goes on in our life, it isn't about us, it's about God's glory. And the way, and if you looked at this, back to our passage here, Christ suffered in the flesh, understand? That needs to be our purpose, because he who has suffered in the flesh has ceased from sin so as to live the rest of the time in the flesh, no longer for the lust of men, but for the will of God. You know, it's about living for the will of God. And sometimes he uses suffering for instruction. I think, you know, David Jeremiah study I'm using a lot on this, and He lists some of these purposes that we go through these struggles. One is to train us in obedience, as we've read in Hebrews. Hebrews 5:7-8 says, God had the power to save Jesus from death, and when Jesus was on earth, he begged God with loud crying and tears to save him. In the garden, People say, oh, Jesus wanted to go to the cross. Jesus didn't want to go to the cross. Jesus wasn't an idiot. Jesus was not stupid. Jesus was, he didn't want to do that. And he begged God, don't make me do it. But he truly worshiped God. And when you truly worship God, it's not about you and what you want. It said, God listened to his prayers. Jesus is God's own son, but still he had to suffer before he could learn what it really means to obey God. Wow. To train us in obedience, and then to produce patience. Romans 5:3 says, not only this, we glory in afflictions also, knowing that our afflictions work out patience. And also to prevent pride. 2 Corinthians 12, 5, 12, 7, 8, 9 says, to keep me from being puffed up with pride because of the many wonderful things I saw, I was given a painful physical ailment which acts as Satan's messenger to beat me and keep me from being proud. Three times I prayed to the Lord about this and asked him to take it away. But his answer was, my grace is all you need, for my power is greatest when you are weak. I am most happy then to be proud of my weaknesses in order to feel the protection of Christ's power over me. Wow. To teach us God's ways. Number four. Psalm 119:65 says, you have kept your promise, Lord, and you are good to me, your servant. Give me wisdom and knowledge because I trust in your commands. Before you punished me, I used to go wrong, but now I obey your word. How good you are. How kind. Teach me your commands. The proud have told lies about me but with all my heart I obey your instructions. They have no understanding, but I find pleasure in your law. My punishment was good for me because it made me learn your commands. Oh. He got in trouble with sin, didn't he? And God punished him. But that punishment was good because it made him turn back to God and turn back to God's command, and God was able to teach him his ways. And then, number five, to prepare us to comfort others. I think this is probably one of the best ones in 2 Corinthians 1:3-4. Let us give thanks to God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, the merciful Father, the God from whom all help comes. He helps us in all our troubles so that we are able to help others who have all kinds of troubles, using the same help that we ourselves have received from God. And I think the last one to prove us is important too. 1 Timothy 4:14 says, use the gift you were given. You know, an oyster, you know what an oyster is. It forms those beautiful pearls because a speck of sand gets in there and it begins to cover over that sand with the pearl. And over time, it becomes this irritating sand becomes a pearl of great value. And I believe God layers our difficulties with his greatness and glory until we develop our own pearl of great price, which is strength of character. And remember this, folks, for the Christian, suffering always leads to this, strength of character. So, we've covered a lot about suffering, and some people don't like talking about that, but, you know, it's there, and that's what we wanted to study. But I want to ask you a couple of questions just for you to respond. One is, why should suffering in this life be expected? We live in a broken world. We're born into sin. How many of y'all have never sinned? Okay. And to be honest with you, you know, I don't know that even if we hadn't sinned, we wouldn't suffer. Did Jesus ever sin? Did Jesus ever suffer? He did. Now some people say, well, the only reason he had to suffer was because of our sin. And that may be true to an extent on the cross, but I think there were other things that he went through in life that were not that pleasant. But I think he went through that to develop his character as well. God was working in his life. God was tempting him. You remember in the temptation, that probably wasn't that wonderful of an experience, was it? But he went through it. So you understand that suffering, if it is done, if you got the idea that only people who suffer are the people who deserve to suffer, or the people who are being punished, you're wrong. Because Jesus did not do anything to deserve to suffer, period. And he did some suffering before the cross. Okay? So think about that. And then the other question is, why is the world's teaching about suffering unrealistic? First of all, what does the world teach about suffering? Yeah. It's like they got a deal thing. I make a deal with you, God, if I do this, this, and this, I won't suffer. Or something of that nature. But even if they're not talking about God, what do they think about suffering? What do they teach? What do we teach about Santa Claus? Oh, you better watch out. You better not. If you're good, Santa Claus will come and bring you all these wonderful presents. If you're good, if you're good, if you're good. And the problem is, there ain't any kid in the world that's good. They're not. You know, and that's the world philosophy. If you're good, you won't suffer. Is that true? How many of y'all ever known a good person? Okay. I mean, let's be honest. We've all how many of y'all known those good people to suffer? And the world is unrealistic when they expect just because a person's good, they're not going to suffer. That's unrealistic. I taught school for years. And you know what I heard more than anything else when I gave a test? That's not fair. That's not fair, Glenn. That's not fair. And I'm going to say, no, it's not fair because, first of all, I'm a human being and there's no way I can make a fair test. I just can't, right? Second of all, I'm preparing you for life because life isn't fair. You know, anyway, I don't even know what time it is. I'm sorry. It's time. Okay, good time. We're going to take a break here.